This is ContactTalkRadio.com, consciousness in action, and you are taking action into your consciousness by tuning into Contact Talk Radio.
And on TuneIn.com, Hing.fm, and Upsnap Mobile.
Contact Talk Radio.
Welcome to Living Fearlessly with your host, Lisa McDonald.
My mama told me when I was young, we're all on superstars. She rolled my hair, put my lipstick on, in a glass of purple dry.
Good morning, everybody. Thank you so very much for joining me, rejoining me here again on this lovely Friday. My name is Lisa McDonald, host of Living Fearlessly with the Contact Talk Radio Network. Listenership spans to 145 countries, 220 TV radio terrestrial satellites, and the potential for millions of iTunes downloads. I am joined today by yet another phenomenal guest. My guest today is a gentleman by the name of Jake Gold. I'm going to tell you a little bit about Jake before I turn it over, as I always do, to Unscripted Dialogue. So who is Jake? Well, Jake Gold is an American-born Canadian musician manager. He was a judge on the Canadian Idol television program. In addition to Idol participants, he has managed popular Canadian artists like The Tragically Hip, The Watchmen, The Clicks, and Sass Jordan. His management company, the Management Trust MGM Trust, currently works with a number of artists like Mo Berg and Lawrence Curry. He has been awarded Manager of the Year three times by the Canadian music industry. So, Jake, I want to welcome you to my show. How are you?
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's lovely to have you. I mean, being a fellow Canadian, you know that we love you dearly and you've been followed for many years. So I just want to do, as I always do, Jake, I always am interested in knowing the inception of my guest journey. So where did this all begin for you? What did it drive out of passion as somebody who was naturally drawn to music? And then you kind of morphed into the business world in terms of representing talented folk? Or how did this all align for you?
Well, interestingly enough, I was reminded by some friends that I grew up with from public school that we, you know, I get together with these guys every once in a while to play cards. And a while back, one of them said, you know, you and this other friend of ours were the only guys that got to do what they always wanted to do. And I said, why do you say that? And they said, don't you remember in grade six when you were, you know, 11, that there were these three women that wanted to enter the school talent contest, and you said that you would manage them, and so you rehearsed them for 2 weeks, and then they ended up winning the contest. And I was like, I guess I started when I was 11. So,
wow. That's
so interesting. I didn't remember that, and then they reminded me of it, and I said, oh, wow, that's pretty cool. But basically I used to sing in bands when I was in my teenage years in high school, and then I went on the road with a band that my friends were in, and we did I was a lighting guy, and it was me and a sound guy, and then I moved to LA for a couple of years and did some work on the phones, actually learned how to sell over the phones. This is back in 1979-80, and then I ended up coming back to Toronto because a friend of mine's band was had got a record deal, and they're about to go on tour, and they asked me to be their tour manager and lighting guy. And they ended up breaking up after like a month. Mm-hmm. But they reformed, and my buddy who I had grown up with was the drummer, came to me and said, we want you to be our manager. And I said, well, I don't know anything about it. And his words were, don't worry, you'll be good. And that was in 1981, and that's kind of all I've ever done since.
Amazing. Well, let me go back to the three people at the talent contest. How did they fare as a result of being led by you and coached by you?
I had said they won.
Okay, fantastic. Amazing. And so the other thing that you said that I really appreciate, Jake, because I think it's very important for the listeners to really hone in on this point, is, you know, you didn't just land in it. A lot of people, they think success is an overnight gig, that things just always align with people. People get one great opportunity after another. But really, going back to what you've cited, you really do have to pay your dues and work your way up the ladder and be humble enough to do so, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's you know, there's no such thing as an overnight success, even with a band.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it doesn't happen that way. Bands have to put in their, you know, as Malcolm Gladwell says, 10,000 hours.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's important. And, you know, I always said that, you know, you have to build a critical mass with any business. So, you know, I didn't start making real money as a manager till I was, you know, almost 10 years in. And I always used to say it was the 10-year plan, and then Malcolm Gladwell came out with his book and said, you know, 10,000 hours, which was basically 10 years. So
right.
It's the same thing. And I didn't start making real money till I'd been doing it for 10 years, you know, where I was able to actually, you know, pay my own bills. And, you know,
mm-hmm.
so I was struggling, you know, I was, you know, working 18-hour days. I'm still working long hours because that's what we do.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
It doesn't stop. You know, if you're going to be an entrepreneur, you know, that's what you do. It's as much a lifestyle as it is a job. Like, I don't think of myself as having a job. I've never really, I joke all the time, I've never had a job and I hate my boss, you know?
Right. We talk about that quite a lot, actually, on radio, because a lot of the people who I do showcase do tend to be entrepreneurs and have that entrepreneurial spirit. And it's true. People would much rather, you know, bust and hustle and grind 18 hours a day for something that they absolutely feel impassioned to do, feel a calling to do. They know it's innately their purpose and it's their choice to honor themselves and going forward. And, you know, the other thing that you said, too, that I think is very important for the listening audience here is, you know, it is once you really get to that point, that echelon in your career where you start to really feel like you're in the groove, like everything is starting to come together. And it doesn't minimize or negate the fact that there's always going to be challenges and there's always going to be, you know, third party people that you're somewhat reliant on to make things magically happen and get out of the gate. But, you know, it's important to also note that when you really love what you do and you're on that momentous path and you're continually starting to see the climb and you're feeling the climb and your name's getting more recognizable as it has for you, Jake, you know, you probably continually get busier because more people want to attach their name to yours, or they really appreciate the integrity of your work or your brand or your reputation, that just brings about additional collaboration and partnership and opportunities, does it not?
Well, listen, critical mass is key, right? Like, that's what's really important is that, you know, when you first start in any business, people want to make sure that you're real, that you're going to stick around.
Mm-hmm.
So it's important that, you know, you stick around, that they know that because, you know, one of the things that I always believe is that we're really not in it. We're all in the same business, no matter what business you're in, and it's a relationship business.
Yes.
And we're all in that business. And so nobody's going to feel like no one's going to feel like getting involved in a relationship with someone that they don't think is going to be around.
Mhm.
You know what I mean?
I absolutely do. And because, you know, being an entrepreneur and a lot of the things that we do, whether you're a podcaster, whether, you know, you do what you do, Jake, in the music industry and all the artists and everybody who's aspiring to kind of so-called make it, you know, what separates, in your opinion, having worked and interfaced with so many people, putting talent and skill aside, but what do you think separates the dime a dozen people in any respective industry to the people who actually do shine, do stand out, and who are taken seriously, aside from the longevity?
Well, I think, look, you know, I invest in stars.
Mm-hmm.
I hate to say it. It sounds so trite, but I literally do. I invest in stars. I'm looking for people that know how to move people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it.
And what do you think? And what would you say, based on your expertise, your experience, and having been around the block and having a good radar for people in general?
Around the block makes me sound so old and tired.
Well, you're neither of
them. Why are you saying that? Been around the block, that's not fun.
No, but you're veteran.
I call myself a 59-year-old millennial.
I love it. I love it.
Yeah. I probably know more about you know, the modern world than most people in their 20s, but go ahead.
No, and you're probably right. And, you know, it's all a matter of interpretation. When I say around the block, that's actually an indirect compliment. It shows that you're a veteran.
Okay.
Yes.
I'll take it that way, Lisa.
Please do. Please do take it for the compliment that it was. So, you know, but what establishes people, what differentiates people, do you believe, again, aside from the longevity that they've invested into their careers and taking talent and skill aside? Because we know sometimes people who are deemed to be the it factor, it doesn't always come down to just skill and talent. It embodies.
Well, listen, it's hard work, Lisa. Okay.
Yep.
It's hard work. And secondly, you know, I always say this when I have a band come in to meet with me. You know, I work with other kinds of talent. I work with a hypnotist who's got a great show called Hip-Prov that he works with improv people. I work with two authors. I manage a chef named Christine Tizard. She's got a show on YouTube called The Three-Way Chef, and she has a book coming out, a cookbook coming out. I work with a stylist who has a YouTube channel. So I work with a lot of different types of talent. But at the end of the day, you know, I always say the same thing to them, is there's no plan B.
Mm-hmm.
And if they come in here and say, you know, I do this on the side because I'm a banker, or I'm this, or I work in an insurance company, or I'm this, then I generally don't work with them.
Right.
My feeling is always, you know, this has to be your number one priority.
Mm-hmm.
And people say, well, how am I going to pay my bills? I said, well, you know what? That's the struggle. And that's what separates, you know, the people that do it from the people who don't. And if you look at if you just look at the artists, for example, the musicians, the great artists, the really successful ones probably couldn't do anything else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not really employable people.
Right.
They probably couldn't have a job. Could you imagine Bob Dylan having a job? Could you imagine Kurt Cobain having a job? Like, you know, you have to think about it from that standpoint. So my whole thing has always been about, you know, if I'm going to come to work every day, mm-hmm. and I don't have a plan B, why would I work with someone that has a plan B?
Bingo.
And it was really interesting. I heard Ed Sheeran on Howard Stern's show recently, in an interview, it was on a little while ago, and then they rebroadcast it recently. And he said, Howard asked him the question, "Why you?"
Mm-hmm.
And he said, "Look, you know, there's a lot of great talented singer songwriters out there who some may be more talented than me." He says, "But I got to tell you, I never had a plan B." Like, he
love
used
it.
Those exact words.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, "This is all I've ever done since I was 15 years old."
Well, you hit upon something that I really think is important to emphasize, because this is something that I've said myself being interviewed by other people. And I think if you truly are all in, if you say that you are 100% full throttle all in, then how can that be true if you do in fact have a contingency plan? To me, that kind of contradicts the whole statement of saying, yeah, please take me seriously. I do deem this to be a priority. This isn't just a hobby. This is actually part of my DNA. So I really like the fact that you brought that up, because I think it's an important, I think it's very important to highlight that for people who are maybe listening into the program. They're listening to what you're saying. They see what you do for a living. And these are the things that you would have to discern with the people that you choose to align with and take on to represent. So for the people that you do represent, for the people that you do choose to represent, taking aside what you just said about them not having a plan B, they have to be all in and it has to be their number one priority. What else makes you feel like, okay, this is a good fit, this is a good match? Is it synergy? Is it what would that be for you, Jake?
Well, I have to like the people. Like, life's too short to work with assholes. Excuse
yeah.
my language. You know? I really have to like them.
Yeah.
And I have to be able to trust them.
Right.
You know?
Right.
But I also have to know that I feel that they can move people.
Mm-hmm. And so far, has it been a pretty good record for you, a good run with the people that you have chosen to represent?
No, it's you know, if you're in the business, you know, if you're in the business, you're not going to have, I'd be lying if I said everything I touched was a hit. That's just not true.
Right.
They still have to make great music.
Mm-hmm.
You know, on that front, there has to be, you have to make great content, whether it's music, whether it's, you know, whatever you're doing.
Absolutely. Absolutely, you do. So in terms of going back to what I cited in the top of the hour there, I mean, you're notably known, aside from some of the other accolades I had already mentioned and highlighted. But in terms of your time on Canadian Idol, you know, again, it's like everything else. People see it. You know, there's been perhaps some editing that's gone on in the background. You do pre-records, whatever the case may be. But in terms of some of the challenges or educating the listeners here, even myself, Jake, you know, what do people not necessarily know? People think this is all bling and it's all jazzed up and, you know, what a wonderful opportunity. And I'm sure that it is. And I'm sure that you're humble and grateful for everything that has crossed paths with you. But what would people not necessarily know about, whether you call it show business or being on TV or being a part of being instrumental in, you know, pivotal with people's journeys, people who take the stage and you've got so many people to choose from and you have to make decisions, split second decisions. So, you know, what can you enlighten us about that experience that the general public might not otherwise know?
Well, first of all, you know, what you need to understand is, you know, the as far as the TV show goes, that was only the audition shows were pre-recorded. The other shows were all live.
Right.
So it was whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
And there wasn't really much behind the scenes. As far as the audition shows go, you know, we would shoot hundreds of hours of footage. And I always would say the editors were the real stars of those shows because they would have to sift through all this footage. You know, while we were shooting, the producers would be sitting at a desk looking at a television screen. And, you know, if they saw something great that they said, okay, that needs to be in the show, they would mark it and make sure the editors knew that. Mm-hmm. But by and large, you know, there would be so many cameras and so many angles and so many different things said. We would see, you know, upwards of, you know, 60 to 100 people a day when we were doing auditions. So really, it was up to the production team to decide what people were going to see when it came to the auditions. But, you know, at the end of the day, once we got to the top 20 where we went live, that's where, you know, the public decided on who they liked. And, you know, there was no instructions. No one told us, oh, you have to do this, 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 right?
Right.
None of that. We just did what we felt, you know. I always had a rule with them, and I told them, you know, I will never say anything that I wouldn't say to a client.
Mm-hmm.
That was my personal rule. But there was no, like, oh, we want you to be more like this, or we want you to, there was none of that.
Right.
At least not with me. At least not with me. I don't know if anything was said to anybody else.
Okay, so fair enough. And so when you're in a position, and you're part of the journey with somebody who's really got lofty goals and somebody who clearly believes in themselves, because I think it takes a lot of courage to take the stage and to be perhaps ridiculed or to be dissected, or just to be on camera. So for people who perhaps, for whatever the reason may be, clearly there was maybe some talent, but they had a moment where they kind of succumbed to the pressure, kind of had an out-of-body experience, but it didn't work in their favor. When you see somebody who just doesn't pull it all together in the moment that they're supposed to shine and they're being evaluated and it's a do-or-die kind of moment, do you ever go back? Is there ever an opportunity to go back to some of these people who just maybe didn't shine in that particular moment, but you knew that they were too good to let go or to not follow up with?
You know what? I don't even remember.
Okay.
I think that, like, there were people. Remember, once it went to the public, it was out of our hands anyway, so it didn't matter, right?
Right.
There were people that in the audition process that we, let's say we gave a gold ticket to,
Yeah.
And then we went to the first round of the top, you know, 200, 100, whatever it was, to get down to the 20, where we would do 3 days of, like, really sort of, you know, cruel boot camp almost. If we felt that someone didn't have a great day on the first day, but we remember their audition, we would say, okay, well, let's give them a pass and let's see how they do tomorrow. You know, so we would do that. We would always give everybody the benefit of the doubt if we felt they were really strong when we first saw them. There was nobody that we would, that, so you would have had to have at least got to that round before we would even consider thinking about whether they were worthy. But like I said, once it got to the top 20, in some years it was 22, it really was up. That's where the public voted. So we didn't really, you know, all we could say is what we thought of their performances. And if that somehow, you know, tilted the audience to vote a certain way, then that's what would happen. But there wasn't a specified movement to, like, oh, let's all get behind this person because we need to really push them. That wasn't how it went.
Okay. Well, that's good to know, because, you know, you don't know what you don't know. And, of course, nobody can really speak to that experience aside
from. But even if it was, I wouldn't tell you, so it doesn't matter.
I'm sure you wouldn't. I love your honesty. You're pretty blunt. I love that.
Well, you know, like, it is TV, you know. You know, there's a thing I say, and I think it happens way too often in our industry these days, especially with social media and everything else, is, like, you know, you don't always have to pull the curtain back from the wizard.
Right. Very true.
You know,
true.
Like having a little bit of mystique, having a little bit of, you know, a lot of people buy into fantasy, you know, like, there's nothing wrong with that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, why don't you share?
There's an artist that is my favorite artist of all time, and that's Peter Gabriel.
Oh, he's amazing.
Now, I have had many opportunities to meet Peter Gabriel, to have dinner with him, like, all kinds of opportunities thrown at me. Mm-hmm. And I have turned every single one of them down.
Why?
Because I don't want to meet him.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, and everyone says, oh, he's the nicest guy, and I'm sure he is. I'm sure he's wonderful. I'm sure he's an awesome person, but I do not want to meet him.
Are you worried about maybe the illusion of some of what you think or presume to be embodied into part of his personality, that by meeting him it kind of dispels a bit of that, and you don't want that shaken?
I just, I literally don't want it. I don't want to normalize him. You know, I actually was at a show of his in Montreal. He was performing with an orchestra. He was on tour with an orchestra. My brother and I drove up. It was my brother's birthday, and I said, let's go, because he's a huge fan too. And we drove to Montreal. We went to the show, and we were backstage, and he was, you know, meeting people and greeting people at this sort of meet and greet thing. And he was just walking around, you know, a lot of people there. And I literally took a picture of my brother and him.
Wow. Lovely. But you didn't want a picture of you and him?
Nope.
Okay. Wow. You're pretty firm on your non-negotiables, aren't you?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah.
Okay. So
I think I think that's another thing, is that, you know, it's interesting you bring that up, because in my mind, you really do have to decide who you are and what you are and how you want to, you know, how you want to see yourself.
Absolutely.
It was the same way on Idol, that I was specific about how I wanted to be represented. Mm-hmm. If I felt like there were a couple of times where there was a particular editing in an episode that I didn't like how it was edited, because I specifically asked, I need to see how you're going to put that piece together. And I saw, and I said, I don't like, you know, how this is being perceived. We need to do this, this, and this in order for it to come off the way it should come off. And they agreed with me, and we re-edited it, you know, so.
Excellent. Excellent. So, you know, why don't you, I mean, there's always public opinion out there, and there's always going to be the haters, and there's always going to be the supporters and whatnot. But it's more important for whatever you do, just walking the face of the earth, whether you're out as a public figure or in the public eye or not, that you feel comfortable in your own skin, that you own the stage in your own life. So in terms of who you know yourself to be inside and out, how do you characterize yourself, Jake?
I don't.
Okay.
I don't think of it that way. The only thing I can say is I'm brutally honest, but I'm honest in every single way. Like, I don't need to lie to people, and I've never stiffed anybody for money. Like, I'm just, that's the way I am. I fight for my clients.
Uh-huh.
If you wanted to look at it from that way, I just say like I'm a stand-up person. So
lovely, lovely. Now, in terms of the people that you represent, you know, and I'm sure every situation is uniquely different and defined according to a whole host of reasons and things. But how long do you stay with a particular client? Is it until they achieve the goal that you mutually decide upon is where you want to get your client to go and where your client themselves wish to go? Or is it once they continue to, they're riding the momentum of what they've continued to cultivate in terms of their content, their popularity, their presence?
I don't leave anybody specifically. I mean, it's like any relationship. Sometimes the relationship ends.
Yeah.
Sometimes you both tried hard to achieve something, it didn't happen, so you agree to disagree, you know.
Okay.
The goal from the beginning is to work together as long as possible. I signed the Tragically Hip in 1986 with my partner Alan Gregg, and I managed them till 2003.
Wow.
So that was 18 years.
Fantastic. Fantastic.
So, I managed the Watchmen for 14 years.
Mm-hmm.
So the goal always from the beginning is that you want to have a long, fruitful relationship. You know, I operate always from a standpoint of career management. I'm not there to sort of let's make a deal and make some money and then move on to the next deal. You know, that's not what I do.
Right. No, I get it. But I think it's still an important question to ask because in certain industries, let's just, if we parallel that with, say, for example, somebody who's going to a therapist and, you know, people will say, okay, well, if nothing's changed or you haven't mutually grown or you haven't expanded or you haven't become more innovative, perhaps you need to see a new therapist. Maybe it's better to go and meet somebody else who can bring something to the table that perhaps I haven't or I can't. So not really knowing your industry in the way that you do, and this being your expertise and knowing what you do inside and out, I think that's why I'm asking the question, because there's a lot of people who plug into the show. They're interested in entrepreneurial spirit for sure. They're interested. Everybody loves music. Who can't resonate with music? We all do. But in terms of looking at it from its own perspective as an industry, people don't necessarily understand the nuts and bolts of what keeps people glued together, what draws people apart, what makes something
I think I answered it by saying
yes,
that if it doesn't work, you know it. It's not that different than any kind of relationship, whether it's a marriage or a boyfriend-girlfriend or a girlfriend-girlfriend or a boyfriend-boyfriend. It's the same thing, right?
Right.
It's like either it's working and you stay doing it or it doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
And you know it pretty quickly when things start to dissolve.
Right.
Sometimes the client gives up and they don't really want to do it anymore. The band breaks up. That's happened too, where the band breaks up and there's nothing there. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they have other things going on in their lives and they decide this is not going to be their priority.
Right.
So, that's kind of, it's no different than anything else, any other kind of relationship. And you kind of know it when you do. Listen, we've all probably, in anything we've ever done, stayed at something longer than maybe we should have.
True.
Because, there's a certain, there's a certain loyalty or whatever. But at the end of the day, you know, you usually know when it's time to move on.
Right. Well, let me ask.
And like a therapist, like a therapist, you know.
Right.
In that way.
Yeah. Or,
you know, but in a lot of ways, you know, that's kind of what I do too. You know, I spend a lot of time talking to my clients about things that have nothing to do with their career.
Well, no doubt that you would. When you're working that closely and that intimately and you're talking about, I'm sure a lot of their, well, we know for a fact, I don't have to make it out like it's a presumption. We know that a lot of artists, their greatest content comes from their real life experiences. Call it pain, call it heartbreak, call it loss, call it grieving, call it whatever. So, you know, when you're traveling that journey with somebody side by side, you know, you'd be privy to a lot of things that don't necessarily have anything to do with the music per se. Which leads me to something, because I just want to go backwards to something you just said there in terms of, you know, when relationships, business, personal or otherwise, you know, they tend to separate for a whole host of reasons. If you're working with somebody who, you know, perhaps they're feeling blocked or something's happened where they're feeling a little bit more fragile, a little bit more vulnerable, so they're not feeling top of their game and they don't feel like they're more in their head, so they're starting to get self-conscious or whatever the case may be, and they want to throw in the towel, are you able to, not that you don't want to respect their wishes, but when you see that it's coming from a place of them operating at their lowest vibrational level and not something that would be characteristically how they would navigate the journey, do you then go into like mentorship role and say, okay, look, let's just take a break from this. You're going through a lot of stuff right now. I don't think this is ultimately what you want to definitively decide for yourself. Let's just put on the brakes for a bit, reevaluate, reassess, and come back to the drawing board. Like, have you kind of coached?
Lisa, is that a question or are you telling me?
I'm asking you.
No,
yeah.
Because look, what I do is I'm a cheerleader, I'm a therapist, I'm a business person, I'm all of those things. And so, you know, there's plenty of times I was on a phone call with a client this morning. Mm-hmm. Who was, you know, who just was presented with an awesome new opportunity and couldn't stop talking about, you know, the people that got in his way for a different opportunity. And I said, look, you know, that already happened. And you have this other opportunity that's unbelievable. So why are we even talking about this other opportunity that didn't happen?
Right.
And they went, oh, yeah, you're right. I said, you know, let me tell you something about really good. I had this conversation 90 minutes ago.
Uh-huh.
I said, let me tell you something about entrepreneurs. Real entrepreneurs don't look backwards.
Right.
They look forwards.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why is because you can't change what already happened.
True.
So it's time to let's just keep looking forwards.
Love it. Absolutely.
And that's what it's about. There's a great book that I read called The Geography of Genius.
Mm-hmm.
And it talks about these clusters of genius that happened in different over historical times in different cities around the world.
Mm-hmm.
And it sort of does an analysis on why. Why did this happen then? Why did this happen then? And what was really interesting is when the guy was doing an analysis of all the geniuses, the so-called, you know, the Aristotles, the Socrates, the, you know, the Steve Jobs, like, you know, he brought it all the way forward. He said that none of them looked backwards.
Mm-hmm.
They always look forwards.
Absolutely. And one does have to stop.
Yeah. So I think that, you know, that's part of what I do is focus, is getting my clients focused on what's really important, you know, how to prioritize those
mm-hmm.
kinds of things. And I got to tell you, I can't say I knew all this when I started. This
mm-hmm.
is stuff that even I've learned over the years. You know, I've been doing this 37 years.
Mm-hmm.
So when I first started, I was flying by the seat of my pants. It's like the guy who said to me, don't worry, you'll be good, he must have known something. You know, I was in 2013, I was I was inducted into the, I guess you would refer to it as the Manager's Hall of Fame. And I invited him and his wife, you know, to the induction. And I said, like, here he is. This is the guy who, you know, as much as I can discover talent and I, you know, look for great talent, here's a guy that saw something in me, that trusted in me to work with him. Now, nothing ever happened with that group, but it was, you know, one begot the other.
Yeah.
You know, so that's how, you know, the relationship business works. And I, you know, I credited him with having enough faith in me to you know, trust in me that I was at least going to, he knew I would work hard for him.
Fantastic. Well, we're kind of getting to the bottom of the hour here, Jake. So, I'd like to give you the opportunity not only to let people know where they can connect with you, you know, artists out there who perhaps maybe want to have a conversation with you about being represented by you. But what does living fearlessly mean to you?
I think, you know, I will tell you that after having seen the Tragically Hip on tour in 2016, I hadn't seen them for some time, and I went to six of the shows, and I went to the first show in Vancouver. I went to the two shows in Vancouver. The first show was in Victoria, and the second and third show were in Vancouver. And after having seen Gord Downie and what he went through, and him up on stage that night, I just said, you know, this is perspective for all of us to live by, and I at that point I said to myself, okay, you know, you have to live in the moment. You have to live in the moment. And that goes right back to don't look back, you know.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so in terms of upcoming talent, who do you have your eye on that perhaps might not be a notable name at this point, but who you see star quality, somebody who really shines?
Well, I'm working with this group called Commandeer that I'm very excited about. Mm-hmm. And I think they have a huge promise as far as music goes. I'm also working with, you know, a great chef and a few others, you know, so.
Right.
Christine Tizard. I work with a stylist. I'm working with this young author named Alessia Dixon, who she's 18. She's already written her first book. She has her second book being written. She's won all kinds of literary prizes.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Brilliant. And so who very quickly are some of your tangible, intangible mentors that have really helped you along your journey?
Well, there was a guy named Dave Kirby who was one of the first guys that ever sort of took me under his wing in the early 80s. Mm-hmm. And then in 86, in 85, I met Alan Gregg, and we became partners in 86. And he was probably the biggest mentor for me in terms of knowing how to run a business and that kind of thing. So
amazing. So for people who are listening right now who are, you know, aspiring, not necessarily just musicians, because as you said, you showcase different people who do different things. You know, if they were looking for some insight from you in terms of gelling, bonding, something that goes a little bit against the grain for what people would normally characteristically say, okay, you've got star quality. You know, what would you ask them to bring to the table? And outside of just it being their number one priority and commitment and no contingency plan, no plan B, what else do they need to bring to the table to be taken seriously by you?
They have to have a real sense of self.
Right.
That's really important. Mm-hmm. That they know who they are. I'm not a packager.
Right.
You know, I'm not the guy that says, put on these clothes, let's get some dancers, we'll get you some songs, and we're going to turn you into a star. That's not what I do.
Mm-hmm.
So a sense of self is really important.
And how can you, I mean, obviously you're old enough, you've lived enough, you've got experience, and you're with people all the time. So you can pick up on things, a lot of the nonverbals, you can pick up on authenticity and true leadership and people's level of self-awareness and self-belief. But how can you tell if somebody like somebody might think, I really do believe in myself. I really do have self-confidence. I am really assertive. I am really all in. How can you discern sometimes questioning that? I mean, do you have periods where you question, okay, is this really true? Like testing people's congruency?
You know, that's the learning curve with anybody. You see when it comes, you know, you with any kind of talent, you see whether they actually have the talent, whether they have the ability to move people. You know, I always like to say, you know, my biggest asset is I know how to spot charisma. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what I'm looking for. So if they have all that, then you start to learn about each other. You know?
Absolutely. And who are some of your favorite musicians outside of people that you've represented?
I told you Peter Gabriel.
Yeah, and aside from Peter Gabriel, because, of course, he stands in a category all his own. But who else has been up there for you in your life?
Cat Stevens.
Yeah.
There's a lot. There's so many. You know, I was really into progressive rock in the 70s. I'm a big fan of Pearl Jam.
Yeah.
I really like this band, July Talk. I think they have the goods to be a huge act. You know, okay. So.
And do you find yourself chiming into The Voice and other programs that showcase music, musicians? Do you have time for that? No?
No. I never watched Idol before I was on it, and I'm not really a fan of that stuff.
Well, that's interesting. May I ask why?
Because I prefer to work with creators. I don't necessarily work with just singers.
Okay. And do you find sometimes, does it have that feel or that flavor sometimes where it just feels like karaoke because not very many people are going out on the stage to have their one moment to shine, and it's not original, it's kind of copycat, even if they infuse their own version or their own flavor into it? Is it too karaoke-ish for you?
No, it's not about that. It's just like I work with creators.
Right.
So they're not creators.
Okay, gotcha.
You know, okay. I work with people who you know, make a living from their imagination.
Okay. And do you play any musical instruments yourself?
Nope.
No?
Not a lick.
And if you could learn an instrument, if that even interested you remotely, what instrument do you think you might gravitate toward?
Probably a cello.
A cello.
I like how they sound.
Okay.
Yeah, Common Deer has an amazing cellist in the band, and they have a violinist as well.
Uh-huh.
But I really love the sound of a cello.
Yes, beautiful.
And it's only four strings, so.
Yeah, a little easier to learn, perhaps.
not if you saw the way Adam played. That's a whole other level of cellist.
Wow. I just had this vision of Ashley MacIsaac. I don't know if he's doing anything recent these days.
Well, he's a violinist. He's a fiddler.
Yeah, he is.
He's a wonderful guy. We spent 1997, another roadside attraction. We spent a couple of weeks on tour together. So
fantastic. Wonderful. And so do you ever find yourself coming full circle, even if you're no longer representing these people, but you're still a part of their journey, either fast forward, they're having kids, they're getting married, or they're producing something new? Are you welcomed back into the fold? Do you find yourself crossing paths with people and it becoming full circle again?
Well, I don't know if there's a difference between being involved with someone in their life and friends as opposed to being in a business relationship. So,
yeah.
You know, most of them, we remain friends. You know, like I talk to the guys in the Hip and I talk to the guys in the Watchmen and, so that kind of stuff. Sass Jordan and I, you know, we worked together for 9 years. We talk all the time. We're like brother and sister, you know, so.
Lovely. And so when we talk about leadership, whether it's in your particular industry or outside of the industry, because it tends to become a bit of a buzzword and it can be, you know, it kind of loses its meaning sometimes, especially when we see how it's depicted or embodied these days, and not to turn it into a political debate, but it is, it's kind of like an overused word that sometimes loses its meaning. What does leadership mean to you, Jake?
Probably lead by example.
Mm-hmm.
And lead to allow your people to do their own thing.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, I think that's it.
Okay. Now, given that you're out in the public, you know, people would probably know a lot about you, but what might surprise not only myself, but the listeners, and maybe even people who have been your peers, people who have been your colleagues, people who you've represented, clients, what do people not necessarily know about you?
That I have a really great sense of design and art.
Wow.
That's one of my biggest passions, is art, design, and architecture.
Beautiful. And so how do you hone that? How do you cultivate that? Is that something that you spend... you donate your extra time? Should there be any extra time, or do you make time for that because you find it soothing and cathartic and therapeutic?
I collect mid-century modern furniture. I'm an art collector. I love looking for interesting pieces of furniture. Art. I go to a lot of museums. I do a lot of things. I go to a lot of galleries, you know.
Mm-hmm. So do people who know that about you, do they seek you out for your opinion on things, design, a taste?
I have plenty of friends that always ask me to go furniture shopping with them or take them to flea markets and...
Lovely.
You know, that kind of stuff.
Well, I'd love to go shopping with you, Jake.
I'm to Toronto.
Okay, well, you're not that far from me, actually. But... So do you find yourself doing a lot of traveling, or are you pretty stationary?
No, I travel a lot.
You do, eh? And does that does that get old for you, or do you actually still quite enjoy it?
No, I really do.
Okay. And where are some of your favorite destinations?
Well, it depends.
Well, you know,
for work or for play, or like I'm confused by that question.
Both. I mean, it could be the same answer for both personal and professional, or it could be completely different.
I really like going to Paris.
Okay.
And I like Denmark.
Mm-hmm.
And I like Australia.
Mm-hmm. Lovely. And how do you like still living in Toronto? You love Toronto?
I love Toronto, yeah. I love Toronto. I lived in New York for a few years, but I really like Toronto.
Fantastic. And so knowing that you've had the experience of working with people abroad, people in the States, and people in Canada, what do you think is a defining difference between Canadian caliber and American caliber? Is it that it gets showcased more so in the States, or do you feel that we're both now – Canadians and Americans are both being properly represented, or what do you think that's all about?
I don't know how to answer that question. I think that you know, if you're going to try and make it in anywhere outside of Canada, you have to start acting like you're not from Canada in a lot of ways.
Okay.
You know, and I don't mean to say that you're not Canadian. What I'm saying is. You know, I think a lot of acts make the mistake that, you know, they'll put in the 5 years to get somewhere in Canada, and then when they go to America, they think they start at the same place they are at currently in Canada. But they forget you got to put those same 5 years in, if not more, because it's a way bigger place.
Right, right. So much more competitive, obviously.
It's not so much the competition. It's you just got to put in the work.
Right. Okay. Fair
you
enough.
Know, you gotta put in the work.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know.
So, would you consider yourself a bit of a visionary, a manifester?
A visionary manifester. You know, I don't know about that. I mean, I'll let someone else decide. I'll let someone else decide that. I don't call myself a visionary. I think that's for other people to say.
Well, I don't mean it in terms of like labeling yourself. I'm trying to get more to the mindset. So in terms of what you've endeavored to accomplish in your life, that obviously comes from the mindset of somebody who I would think is goal-oriented, somebody who sees, okay, this is where I want to be in 1 year from now. This is where I want to be 5 years from now. This is who I'd like to work with maybe in 6 years from now. So do you, based on that description, do you see yourself as a bit of a visionary?
Well, I think those are two very different things. I think, you know, planning goals is not necessarily, in my mind, what a visionary is. I think a visionary is somebody who looks at things differently than most people do. I think they look at opportunities differently than most people do. They plan strategically different than most people do. Mm-hmm. And they look at the overall big picture as opposed to the small stuff. And they're always, you know, 3-4 steps ahead.
Yes.
And I think that's, to me, what a visionary does. And I also think real visionaries have to know to recognize, you know, failure.
Mm-hmm.
And knowing when to pivot.
Right.
It's not a straight line. Mm-hmm. So you can do all the planning you want, but especially when you're dealing with creative culture, sometimes things hit and you got to pivot, and sometimes things don't and you have to pivot.
Absolutely. And basically, essentially, you know, wording it a little bit differently, but it comes down to, in my opinion, you know, adapt, change, or die, really.
Yeah, I mean, I don't.
I mean, that might.
Honestly, Lisa, I think those are really trite words that people use as sort of these catchphrases.
Mm-hmm.
And I find all of it just, you know, bullshit, to be honest with you.
Okay.
I think way too many people, you know, work off these catchphrases, and I, you know, you see them on Instagram and people posting, and you see them on, you know, these other social media outlets, and, you know, and most of those people don't actually do anything. They mm-hmm. just put quotes up. You know, it's like I had a client once I was having an argument with, and they sent me a page out of this book that a lawyer wrote all about, you know, everything you wanted to know about the music business. And he sent me a page about manager-artist relationships. And I wrote him back and I said, you know, you're the kind of people that we laugh at. And I said, we laugh at you because you're quoting a book from a guy that never actually was a manager. He's a lawyer. So I said, you know, I'll pretend I didn't get that from you.
Right. Okay.
So, you know, I don't have a lot of time for people who don't actually sit in my chair every day.
Right. But I mean, I come from the abstract too. And for somebody like yourself who really appreciates the creative process, you know, whether we're in exactly the same world or not, you know, there are people who definitely undeniably do walk their talk. And yes, again, because we're in an oversaturated industry and everyone's on social media, sometimes you do see a lot of recycled, regurgitated stuff, and it loses credibility, and it does lose legitimacy and impact. I get that, because people are saying the same things, but not everybody's walking the talk. So
they're just statements. They don't mean anything. It's like, they're just statements. And that's my point. It's like, I see this stuff all the time, and it just drives me crazy. It drives me crazy that people make a living out there speaking statements, you know? It drives me crazy. I don't, I've been asked to do speaking engagements and stuff, and I go, what? So I can go out there and just spew a whole bunch of statements, you know?
Right.
Or regurgitate other people's information? Yeah, it's not for me.
Okay.
I don't aspire to that. You know, people have asked me if I should write a book, and I'm like, you know, yeah, it's like sort of, I'll write the book when I'm no longer in the business, so no one will be mad at me.
Okay, well, I'd love to have you back on radio at that juncture, but, you know, it's just, and I get what you're saying. Like, I think it's, I just love hearing how other people think and how they back that up with what it is that they say. And I hear what you're saying, and I can see things from devil's advocate all the time. And I think you have to be, because you need to know who your audience is, and you need to know who you're engaged with and how it is that they think, their psyche, their mindset. But I think, you know, the reason why some of these things may, and I'm not putting words, but to other people who are listening who may share in your opinion, Jake, you know, oftentimes, you know, sometimes the same thing does sound redundant. You know, you've heard it a million different times. It does sound like it's a buzzword or it's a catchphrase or it's someone else's statement. But sometimes on the flip side to that, and this is where I always prefer to go, because if it means saving somebody or helping somebody or really helping somebody to shift where they make this huge monumental change in their life, then that, for me, it's worth it versus the other people who are, you know, are opposed to it or they're critics or whatever the case may be. But we all know, like, whether you're talking Tony Robbins, whether you're talking certain musicians who have cited the same thing, you know, I've heard that many, many times phrased before, but the way in which that was said or the fact that that came back with a particular example cited, that really tweaked for me. That really, really tweaked for me. So I always err on the side of you never know how the one thing that perhaps has been said time and time again really does transition somebody. So something to consider.
Yeah.
Right?
I guess.
I'm not here to persuade you or change anyone's mind. I'm just saying there's another way of looking at it. There's always multiple perspectives that are simultaneously
working. Yeah, listen, there's all kinds of multiple perspectives, but you know, my focus is on mine.
Absolutely.
You know, and you know, I know what I do well and I know what I don't do well, you know.
Right.
And that's a learning curve in itself. So
absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Jake, we really have to say cheerio at this point, but I just want to say I want to really thank you for the gift of your time. I know you're off the hook busy, and I just want to say that this has been a pleasure for me. I know you probably do interviews all the time, but I really enjoyed this, and I do. I like your bluntness. I like your, you know, brass tacks. I'm going to say what I say, and you can like it or not like it. You can like me, not like me. I love that. It's a breath of fresh air, so thank you for that. To my listening audience.
Thanks for having me, Lisa.
Well, it's been a pleasure, Jake, and I certainly wish you all my best. And to my listening audience, I want to thank you once again for taking time out of your schedule, for tuning in to Living Fearlessly with Lisa McDonald here at the Contact Talk Radio Network. I want to thank you for being one of over 330,000 Living Fearlessly podcast subscribers. Can't do it alone, so I really appreciate the fact that the content, the guests I have, the high caliber guests who are always imparting their own wisdom, their own insight, that resonates with you. That means a lot to me. I want to encourage you to have a wonderful weekend and to continue to live fearlessly. And we'll be back here again next Friday with another amazing guest. Thanks so much. Take care. Love and gratitude. All my best. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Living Fearlessly with your host, Lisa McDonald. Visit her at lisamcdonaldauthor.com.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.